listen to Locked On Sooners, man. This is Rufus Alexander. I enjoy this podcast and enjoy these guys. I'm going to be listening to it for a while now.
You are Locked On Sooners, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma Sooners, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Sooners Nation, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Locked On Sooners podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, John Williams. You can find me on Twitter at John9Williams. You can read my work covering the Dallas Cowboys over at InsideTheStar.com, and you can also hear me weekly on the Cowboys Brawl podcast. And with me today, as always, is former Oklahoma Sooners offensive lineman and co-host of the Iron Horse podcast with Brandon Carr. You got David Walker. You can follow David on Twitter at D_walk74. David, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, John. I am 4 days away from a new baby boy here in the Walker house and been doing some nesting projects. So I am excited to be talking some Sooner football instead of doing anything else in my house right now. But we're excited tonight, John, because we've got a great guest lined up, a former teammate of mine at the University of Oklahoma, three-time Big 12 champion. He was a draft pick of the San Diego Chargers, former Oklahoma offensive tackle, Wes Sims. Wes, how are you doing tonight, man?
Great. Thanks for having me on, guys. And congrats on the on number three. Three boys. I couldn't imagine that. I got one boy and one girl, and both of them are more than enough.
Yeah, it's going to be it's a lot of testosterone. So, you know, congratulations to me and condolences to my wife for all the energy in the house that is present and to come. So, but we're excited about it.
Well, it's like my wife always says, I mean, we've got one girl, but we've always wanted a boy because she says that boys love their mamas. So
that's true.
Yeah, so she's going to get all kinds of love. So, hey, but Wes, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. And, you know, it's been an absolutely fascinating football season for the Oklahoma Sooners to get started. And maybe fascinating is not exactly the right word. It's been up and down. It's been a roller coaster ride. But what have been some of your general impressions of the Sooners through the first few games of the season?
Oh man, the first couple games was it really a lot of growing pain, and man, in the second half, third quarter, really, and in the fourth quarters of really every game so far. I mean, we look like we're out of shape. Like you can see that summer conditioning hasn't really kicked in, and a lot of guys have even started to say we weren't in good enough shape to finish those first few games. So, I mean, it showed in. And, you know, with younger guys like Spencer being, you know, a freshman and coming along, I mean, we're watching these guys, some of these guys grow up right in front of us, and some of them kind of mold together. And it's just a shame we didn't have those first three games for them to kind of get this out of the way.
So I think, Wes, that, you know, having a weird preseason definitely shows up, right? I mean, we talk about the shape and the conditioning side of it. And the hard part I have with reconciling all of that, the hardest part to me is – that Kansas State and Iowa State had the same issues, right? So when you look at that now, you can say, you know, who's to blame, how it shook out, why we weren't in the greatest of condition. There's a lot of factors in a year like 2020. But given all of those things, what are the things they can be doing now to overcome that? Can they work themselves into shape? Do you feel like what they've done through 4 weeks is, are they playing themselves into shape at this point?
Yeah, they've definitely been playing themselves into shape, and I think they realized after those, especially after the first loss, and then really after the second loss, I think that it kind of dawned on them we're not where we should be. But a lot of that is, you know, they just didn't really establish any run game like they did. Finally, they did it in Texas, and it looked like a completely different team out there. But I mean, really, they haven't changed anything that they've been doing. They just stayed on their blocks a little longer. But technique-wise, I mean, they were sound in the first few games. It was just – and a lot of times it just came down to running back and a safety and us not winning the battle because we got young guys in at running back. So, I mean, it was a combination of both of those, kind of technique and young guys. But I'm kind of excited to see where they're going to go. I mean, this kind of reminds me of the year that we had that Rose Bowl team. You know, we weren't great right off the bat, the beginning in that season, because we had a lot of turnover and a lot of younger guys turning over. But by the end of the season, that was probably one of the strongest teams that we had.
And so what do you have to do as a football team to maybe finish a little bit better in those third and fourth quarters. I mean, they've played pretty well in the first half of games against Texas. They were doing really well in the third quarter, but it seemed like kind of midway through the third and the fourth quarter, they just didn't seem to have the same kind of energy, the same kind of finish to the game. So what do you do differently as a team, as a coaching staff to better kind of get your guys playing for four quarters?
I mean, really, honestly, and this is the offensive lineman in me, but I think it all starts, everything is based off of if you can run the ball or not. If you can come out and run the ball, you're keeping your defense off the field and you're wearing that team down, but you're also setting up those bigger plays, the play action home run plays for later on while you're doing that. And if you can keep churning those yards out and keep pounding the rock, those home run plays will be there, as well as, you know, just opening up the back end of the defense and helping your quarterback out, especially when you have a young quarterback. So if you ask me, it's all going to come down to, can we run the ball in the first half and continue to do it for four quarters?
So Wes, when you look at the offensive line, you mentioned the Rose Bowl team in 2002. And one of the things about that team was there was depth in the offensive line. So there were rotations being had at guard. You know, Davin Joseph was a freshman. You were a freshman. Yeah. We had a lot of depth in there. What did you think about the news of Chris Murray becoming eligible? Now they've got a veteran player from UCLA, started a lot of games in the Pac-12, has a lot of high upside from all accounts. How much does that rejuvenate the offensive line and also just kind of hold those guys accountable that penalties and, you know, bad reps, you know, there's more on the line now when you got a guy like that that's all of a sudden got their hand on the ground that can go in there and make a play?
Yeah, I think what it's really going to do, like you said, is it's going to create a lot more competition, because, I mean, we've seen guys rotate in at every position. Basically at the tackles, we've seen a little bit of rotation, and mostly that was just because Ely wasn't there yet in the first game. But aside from that, I mean, those two guards really haven't changed a whole lot. Every once in a while, they'll bring somebody else in. But, I mean, those guys have been pretty steady in there. And getting another guy with a lot of experience in there, those guys are going to realize that game tape and those game reps are valuable, and not just for playing more the next week, but for if they want to go to the next level, everything they put on that film is, you know, it's there forever, and it's got to be good when it's on there.
Yeah, and so who's the player that's really stood out to you through the first few games of the 2020 season?
Man, I'd say on offense, Austin Stogner. I mean, that guy's just been an absolute beast. And with him being as young as he is and being able to grow and get bigger and be more physical, which I mean, it's just going to be fun to watch that kid grow. I mean, he's just been an absolute monster. I don't know if he's leading the team in receptions and targets, but he should be. I mean, he's just unbelievable. And, man, on defense, I know we've only got to see a small snapshot of him, but, man, I'm really excited about Woody Washington. I mean, it just looks different when he's covering somebody, having a taller cornerback in there and already making plays in his first OU Texas game. I mean, that's exciting to see. So those are probably right now the two guys I'm most excited to watch more of.
And we'll be right back to talk more with Wes Sims in segment two about the offensive line play, dive deeper into that, who stood out to him there. And we'll talk a little bit about Creed Humphrey and where he ranks among centers all time at Oklahoma.
But first, let me tell you about rockauto.com. Rockauto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, the prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers alike. Why spend up to twice as much by going to a storefront auto parts store when you can get the same parts for less at rockauto.com? So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. And now I want to tell you a little bit about Coors Light. But first, let me ask you a question. Do you ever feel like you're always on? What do you do when you need a moment to chill? Well, College Football Saturdays offer the perfect opportunity to football and chill with the only beer that's made to chill, Coors Light. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. Even though there are fewer teams playing on Saturdays, there are still plenty of games and other sports going on to give you the opportunity to relax and have a beer. So whether you're having a beer with friends, cooking some meat on the grill, winding down from working in the yard, or watching a full slate of college football on Saturday, make sure you reach for the official beer of watching any sport or any team just to have a beer. So when you want to reset from a long work day or to enjoy while taking in your favorite team, reach for the beer that's made to chill. You can now get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door by going to get.coorslight.com. So celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And we're back here on Locked On Sooners with former Oklahoma offensive tackle Wes Sims. Wes, as we look at the offensive line play, you know, there's been a lot of up and down with that, been a lot of lack of discipline at times with penalties and things of that nature. And we talked about it a little bit in the first segment. You get a guy like Chris Murray from UCLA, you know, that's going to push guys, no doubt about it. But the versatility that a guy like that brings, who's played center and guard and really can play any of those interior spots. You know, I think back to when you and I were teammates there, we had a guy named Chris Bush that could play basically everything. And
he did.
And it was invaluable. You know, he could step over and play some right tackle if he needed to. He could be a center. He could be a guard. And play with no gloves, no wrist tape, no anything, which I still think is odd. But you know, when you bring a guy
natural.
Like, yeah, just all natural, man. Just country strong, just getting in there with bare hands. But when you bring a guy like Chris Murray in, you know, when I think about the Kansas State loss, a big play in that game was we had a short yardage conversion where Creed Humphrey got banged up. He's out of the game in a backup center. And we try to sneak behind him and don't get it. That was a huge play in the game. And now you got a guy like Chris Murray that can come in there and solidify that interior. But when you look at the offensive line unit as a whole, what players have stood out to you with a high performance so far through four games?
I mean, Creed's looked good. I mean, honestly, in the first couple games, he kind of looked like he was kind of getting worn down a little bit. And Creed's not like he's not a guy that's going to drive his guy off to the sidelines. I mean, Creed, he's more of a cerebral player. He's going to eliminate his guy from the play by whatever means he needs to every play. That's just the way he is, and that's what centers have to do, because when he gets to the next level, he's going to get a 400-pound guy, and you're not driving that guy. You just got to get between him and the ball. You know what I mean? So he's learned how to play that way, and it's fun to watch him come along with it. And I'd like to see Creed play guard a little bit too, to be honest with you. I mean, he needs a little bit of versatility on film for the next level. I know that he's kind of a rare breed with the size that he has playing center, and that's kind of a niche in itself. But, you know, I mean, he's so big, he could play every position on the line. And I'd kind of like to say, I'm kind of curious if they've put him out at tackle and out at guard before, but he has the size to be that guy, and usually if you can play center, you can hold your own at any other position, especially at guard. But I'm also excited about Harrison, the freshman tackle. That kid, he's got unbelievable feet. He's just a little high, and he needs to work on his upper body just a little bit. He's just got to learn to latch on to him sometimes. But he's not afraid to stay in front of anybody, and he can, which is impressive. So, and Ely, man, Ely's came a long way. He's starting to turn into a bookend tackle out there on the right side, and that's perfect. So I'm excited to see him. He was a big recruit coming in, and we were excited to get him. And I'm excited to see him kind of mold into the player he should be.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of growth at Ely as well. That's one of the guys I've taken note of this season. And, you know, when you look at Creed, and, you know, there's been some plays where, like you said, maybe beat down a little bit or worn down a little bit, but there's so much on his plate, I think, right now as the stabilizer of a unit that's been inconsistent. There's a lot on him to lead that unit. But when you look at centers all time at Oklahoma, you know, it's obviously we have a storied program here, and there's all Americans all over the board at every position. And we play with a guy, Vince Carter, that was a Remington Award guy. You know, he's always in the conversation of that every year of his career, seemingly in Norman. But when it comes to the NFL draft, that center position isn't one that we've had a litany of high profile guys or certainly any first round centers taken in the draft. Does he have a chance to be go down as possibly the best center in the program or in that conversation?
Yeah, he's definitely in that conversation. I mean, just out of the players, the guys that I saw when I was getting recruited and the guys I've played with and seen since I've been there. I mean, I think since Vince Carter, he's probably our best center we've had. I mean, Gabe was really good also. But I think, you know, just the size and the ceiling that Creed has, is probably going to put him above most guys. But I mean, Bubba Burcham was a great center, and Matt O'Neill, who played in the late 2000s, and Bob's first year there, that guy was an animal, and he played a couple years in the league, but I think he was a second or third round pick, so he was probably our highest or only other drafted true center. So yeah, he's definitely got a chance to get in the first round. I think he's got to work on a few things, and he's got to stay healthy. I mean, I hope he doesn't turn into a guy kind of like I was. It was just always banged up all the time. So yeah. I hope he can keep it together and keep building on it, man.
And kind of turning back to the Cotton Bowl a little bit and Oklahoma's big win over Texas, the offensive line probably had their best game of the season, at least from my perspective. What do they do to build off of that as they head into the final stretch of Big 12 play?
They just got to continue to be physical. I mean, that's the best thing you can do, whether it's a fast defensive line, you know, a bunch of undersized guys that move really well. The best thing you can do is just pound on them and run the ball. They're great big guys. I mean, you still pound on them, but you run a little more sideline, a little more sweep action. So, I mean, they just got to know the animal that they're against and wear them down up front. And then once you get those guys worn down and start seeing some hands on some hits, then after that, you can kind of call your shots. Then you can start going for those home run balls and everything else. So I'd say just keeping that physical mentality they had against Texas. I mean, guys were nasty, finishing blocks, picking guys off around the pile. I mean, that first couple games, I saw Creed get picked off around the pile a couple times. So, you know, they finally realized that the target's still on their back, even with one or two losses. They're still going to get everybody's best shot, and I think we're starting to see it all come together finally.
Yeah, it's definitely fun to see this team kind of start to play to their potential a little bit in that game against Texas. Oh, yeah, so we're going to come up next with Wes. We're going to continue talking about the Oklahoma Sooners offensive line. We're going to talk about a little bit about Coach Biedenboe and what makes him so good and why he's one of the best offensive line coaches in the country. What kind of impact that has on Oklahoma's recruiting of offensive linemen coming up next. All right. Hey, we are still here on the Locked On Sooners podcast. We're continuing to talk offensive line football with Wes Sims, former Oklahoma Sooners offensive lineman. And Wes, talk to us about Coach Biedenboe and what he means to the Oklahoma Sooners program and why he's so good at what he does.
Man, Coach is unbelievable. I mean, I think he means the world to our program right now. Just his year-on-year consistency that he has with players, no matter whether he has freshmen coming in or, you know, groups of seniors, but all of his players get better while they're there. And that's the thing that you see at other colleges where you'll have a guy come in and start for a year or two, and then he kind of peters off, and you never see him again. But all of his players tend to grow, and just his attention to detail and his technique that he instills in his players and the way that he teaches it, I think, is because anybody can show people technique, but there's very few people that have a way of teaching it to people where they can pick it up and gather it and, you know, apply it on the field. And he has that unique ability to do that.
And he's had quite the success rate with getting guys into the NFL as well. And what kind of impact does that have on the recruiting trail when he can just go down a litany of players that get drafted and not just in the later rounds, but he's having guys that are picked with premium picks in the top three rounds.
Oh yeah. I mean, he hasn't just, well, in that draft a couple of years ago, he had just scattered all through the early and middle rounds of the draft. And I mean, as a recruit coming in, I mean, obviously you know, everybody wants to try to go to the NFL. That's kind of the ultimate goal. But when you're seeing a guy that's consistently having guys come out, and it's not all of them five stars, you know, I mean, there's guys that are JUCO transfers and 2, 3, 4, 5 stars. I mean, some of them weren't even linemen coming in, you know. So, I mean, when you see all that, it's encouraging to see. I mean, when they got guys that they're converting from tight ends and former quarterbacks and everything else, and still sending those guys to the league also, that does everything for recruiting.
Wes, what do you think that he does differently? You know, I mean, we've had good offensive line play for a long time in Norman. You know, you played for Mark Mangino for a little bit when you first signed. Then Kevin Wilson came in, and that's who we, you know, kind of finished up with for, you know, the duration of the 2010s. When you look at Biedenbo, he seems to have a different approach. And, you know, Kevin Wilson had an edge, and we were required to play nasty. But I feel like Biedenbo just does it maybe a little different, but I just can't put my finger on it because I'm not at practice. I don't have that pulse, you know, finger on the pulse of that. But what is your take on what he does that separates himself that is a little bit different than other coaches maybe out there in the country?
I think what I've seen that he does and what he allows his players to do, because some coaches ultimately they want it but won't allow it. His players hold each other accountable. His players police themselves out there on the field and off the field. And I think that's, I mean, all offensive lines do that to an extent, but he's yelling at people, but he doesn't really have to go out there and be that coach that runs out and gets in somebody on the field, because the way he teaches his players, they instill that in each other. So that's, going to a couple of practices and being around some of them on and off the field and talking to them, I think he kind of has a unique approach in that of itself, you know, along with the fact that he's just a great technique coach and, you know, obviously a very cerebral football coach as well. But that would probably be the biggest thing that I see him do.
And that matters. You know, you get to have a guy that has just consistency, not just from a coaching standpoint, a technique standpoint, as you mentioned, but just from a person standpoint, that year to year, you're going to have the same guy. He's not going to get too high, get too low. And it's been remarkable to see just the consistency in which they're able to turn over their offensive line. You know, we talked about just a couple of years ago, they had 4 offensive linemen drafted, and yet they continue to produce really high level talent along the offensive line. And I think this offensive line still has a chance to be one of the better ones because they've got some young talent. We talked about Harrison over there at left tackle. Andre Ely is playing really, really well at right tackle. They've got really good depth. What do you think is kind of the ceiling for this offensive line and even for this team moving forward? Do they still have a shot to work themselves back into the Big 12 title picture?
I think they do. I was looking at it earlier, and honestly, for us to play in the title game, I don't think it can work any other way than if it's a rematch with either us and Texas or us and OSU. I think that Iowa State and Kansas State are just going to both have to completely fall off for it to happen, which I would love to have a rematch with either one of those teams. Mm-hmm. Just with the way that we played, you know, 2 weeks ago. So, but I think that's how it's going to have to shake out.
Well, this weekend, you know, you've got Iowa State and Oklahoma State. And I look at that as that's a huge game as it relates to who's going to get to Arlington. Because Oklahoma, you can look at it one of two ways. You could say you want Oklahoma State to take a loss. You beat them and now you control your own destiny. We both have 2 losses. But then that's betting on Iowa State not to drop a couple games as well. Because, you know, we put ourselves in a weird position because Kansas State's likely to move to 4-0 against Kansas. And if Iowa State upsets Oklahoma State now, there's 2 4-0 teams that beat you. So it's a little bit dicey, but I think, you know, John and I talked about this last week. I think it's very similar to the path we've had to take to the college football playoff the last few years, where we're just looking to find a way to get in that 4 seed for the playoff. But right now, we're just trying to find a way to get to the 2 seed, let the chips fall where they may, and play whoever shows up. But, you know, how important do you think it is from this perspective? Because I think there's a thought that, you know, maybe it's better for some of the issues we've had defensively or some of the inexperience or some of those things to have that year where it's, you know, you call it a rebuilding year and you're really forced to face your issues when you don't go win the Big 12 again versus rallying to win the Big 12 in a year that maybe you, you know, had a lot of glaring weaknesses that that championship overshadows. Do you think that there's, because I'm always on the side of, if you have a chance to win it, you want to win it. But I know there's fans out there that are like, oh, yeah, it's better for us just to rebuild. But I think if you have any chance to defend the title, you got to defend it, right?
Yeah, you don't want a bunch of players on your team that aren't trying to win a championship every week. Right. That's just what's instilled in you down in, you know, in Norman. I mean, there may be other schools where people just say, yeah, let's have a rebuilding year or whatever it may be. But I mean, what the good thing about this year is what, you know, some of the weaknesses that we had, they can be glaring, but they can also be, you know, great things to look forward to in the future. Like, you know, with the things that were happening in the defensive backfield, now we get to see a little more Woody Washington and Harrison's getting sprinkled in a little more, and that'll be great for him. Every week that he's on the field, he's going to get better. And every week that Woody's on the field, he's going to get better. And, you know, those guys may not be every down guys right now, but they may be 3-year guys. You never know. I mean, seeing guys come in as true freshmen that have that kind of talent, that's always exciting to see. So I think there's upside to, you know, having downs and seeing what your weaknesses are. But I think, you know, you never want to lose sight of the picture of trying to win championships and going forward and having your guys be competitive, not just each week, but in each position in and of itself to get out on the field.
No, I agree. And I asked that question because I see fans saying things like this, like, well, I don't even want to make the playoffs and get blown out again. Or I don't want us to win the Big 12 because then we just won't think that we have to fix our issues and we'll fool ourselves into thinking that, you know, we're really not that far away. And I'm always on the side of, look, if like last year, this conversation was, is it worse to go play LSU and get blown out or take the 5 seed and go win a bowl game and everybody feels great about it and pats you on the back all spring? And I'm always of the mindset that you can't win it if you're not in it. And it's a lot easier to fix issues and have conversations that are hard with a ring on your finger and be able to say, hey, we might not have been perfect, but we still endured and still won a title and maintain the level that they have in the Big 12. Because I think the danger is if we don't get a chance to go back to Arlington, it would be pretty disappointing because as a champion, you want somebody to take it from you. You don't want to give it away. And I think they have the opportunity to try to run the table. And at least if somebody's going to take it, they have to earn it and take it from us. And that to me is the biggest thing, is they can't let somebody in the Big 12 fall into a championship because we were quote unquote rebuilding. So I think all of it's still on the table for them, but do you anticipate that they will run the table with 2 losses?
Yeah, I can't really picture this team. I don't really see anybody that I can picture them losing to. I mean, Kansas State and Iowa State are always the two biggest, you know, what if games, you know, just because they're so physical in the way they play and they always play with that extra chip on their shoulder. But you know, OSU, that's a rivalry game. We haven't really got to see much of them. I mean, they looked really great on defense. They beat a Tulsa team that win's looking better every day. I mean, Tulsa's a big physical team. I think they surprised a lot of people with how good they are. But as far as the other two wins, Kansas and whoever the other one was, I mean, we don't really know what we're dealing with there, but they could be really great. I mean, they got a couple of the best offensive players in the country, and they just got a question mark at quarterback, which that can be a big question mark. So I mean, aside from OSU, I don't really foresee anybody being able to get in front of us to stop us or slow us down.
Hey there, Weston. So for a final thought, what do you think goes down in Fort Worth this weekend with TCU?
TCU, I think OU is going to pull it together. I'd like to see us have about 225 rushing yards, and I think that'll really kind of blow this game out of the water for itself. I think it'll be like a 42-17 game if that'll happen. But we still got some things to figure out, and TCU always puts up a good fight against us, and especially when we play down there. It is in TCU down. It's there, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. They always play us tough down there. So I see us winning either way, but I would love to see us go down there and run the ball and not try to get in a shootout with them for once.
Yeah. 200 rushing yards puts a smile on my face. Let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah, from your ears to the god of offensive line play, Coach Biedenbo's, from your mouth to the ears of Coach Biedenbo. Let's do that. Let's go down to Fort Worth. Let's run the football. Let's take a W. Hey, Wes, we just want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us here on Locked On Sooners. We do something every so often here on the show where we get you to shout out a little Boomer Sooner. So, David, you want to lead us out?
Yeah, let's do it, Wes. Boomer.
Sooner.
All right, man. Hey, make sure you go subscribe to the show, and we will hope to have Wes back at some point in time in the near future. Thank you so much, Wes.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, and that's going to do it for today's show. Make sure you come back and check us out tomorrow when we go around the Big 12. Later in the week, we will start digging into TCU. We got a big Big 12 matchup on the way.